Hey there! If you like true crime stories and you love being in the great outdoors, you have come to the right place. I'm Tara, your host. Welcome to Crime Off the Grid. Hey, welcome everybody to another episode of Crime Off the Grid Ranger Tales, where we talk about real stuff from real rangers and, you know, the stuff you just can't make up. And today we've got Nancy Martinez back with us. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Tara. How are you doing today?
Long time no see or listen, whatever. If you want to learn more about who Nancy is, take a listen to the episode just before this one about the Joker in Shenandoah National Park. So if you haven't heard that, maybe press pause on this one and go back and listen to that. But to recap briefly, Nancy was a longtime ranger in Yellowstone National Park before going to Mount Rushmore National Monument, then worked as a law enforcement captain in the U.S. Forest Service, then returned to the National Park Service as chief ranger in Jewel Cave National Park, and then she did some other bad ASS stuff in between. she fought crime for yet another agency, U.S. Marshal Service. So anyway, learn more about her in the other episode. But when we were discussing how we were going to record, you know, that case that we recorded together, we ended up telling some more stories. And
yes,
we had a couple that were kind of similar to each other, but, you know, they were happening in different parks. And so I'm like, hey, would you do Ranger Tales with me? So today, yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to get some stories from both Nancy and me. And they're kind of fun, I think. But I don't know, Nancy, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so my story starts at Mount Rushmore National Memorial, and it was December of 2005 is when the incident actually happened. So I arrived at Mount Rushmore in 2005 in the summer, and Mount Rushmore didn't have a taser program. It was non-existent, and I was used to using tasers in Yellowstone. Yeah. So I sent a taser policy to the regional office because they were going to select a few parks in the Midwest region to have tasers and to just kind of do a trial run.
Yeah, because this was very new for most parks, actually.
It was extremely new, yep. So Rushmore was selected as one of the parks to kind of try these out. So this was about almost, I don't remember the day, but almost exactly 18 years ago that we had two rangers were patrolling and they observed a blue van parked behind the Xanterra Concessions building. They ran the plate and it didn't belong to any employee, so they started to check the vehicle out. And I got to tell you, Rushmore is an icon.
Yes.
Park. And when there's a vehicle that doesn't belong there, these people, those rangers are all over it. They're very observant when it comes to that. So they checked out this vehicle. And about the same time, another ranger was responding to a male and a female that were having an argument up by the information station. So, you know, it's wintertime, no seasonals on board. And so I'm listening to the radio and I left my office and I went out the side to see if I could help these guys mm-hmm. out. When I got outside, I saw Ranger Todd talking to a female. She had two small children with her and her adult brother.
Oh.
The female said her and her husband were having an argument and her husband walked off and she doesn't know where he is. Okay, so that's one incident. We're standing behind the administration building with her. So while dealing with them, an interpretive ranger notified us that a guy was watching us from the trees behind Xanterra. So we're like, okay. And so we turned
kinda
around.
Kind of like Sasquatch and or what?
Kind of, yeah. And so as Ranger Eric and Ranger Todd and myself turned around and we saw this big dude. Wow. I mean, he looked like Grizzly Adams.
So he was?
He was like huge. Sasquatch. Just yeah. He was. And then he's got a Carhartt jacket on and bibs on, Carhartt bibs on. So he looks even bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, than he was. And so he's walking towards us. And picture this. His fists are clenched. And he looks like he is ready to take us on. all three of us. So he was given several commands to stop and get down on his knees, but he refused and he kept coming towards us. So at that time, it was pretty evident he wasn't going to stop. So Ranger Eric and I both reached for our tasers, and Ranger Eric pulled his out first, and the guy stopped.
Yep.
And then he was told, get down on your knees, which this time he did. He complied. When Ranger Todd moved in to handcuff him, he attempted to throw a haymaker punch and hit Ranger Todd. Well, he threw a punch, he missed, and Ranger Eric tased him in the upper part of his back.
For him.
This guy fell to the ground and screamed. And screamed. screamed. So, yeah, exactly, right? Listen to what we say. So immediately, Ranger Todd, that's right, immediately Ranger Todd and I jumped on this guy to handcuff him. So this guy was so big that we could not get his arms behind his back to handcuff him. So we had to use two sets of cuffs. Mm. So, you know, whether we're on the ground, we're trying to get a set of cuffs on, I'm reaching for my cuffs, and so we're trying to, you know, put the two cuffs together. Well, while we're trying to do all this and cuff him, he decides he's going to get up. And so Ranger Eric told him to stay down.
Because you're still tethered to the taser, right? He's still got his probes in him,
Right, right. He's still hooked up. So at this point, I look down, and my arm is between the two taser wires. Now, I've been tased, so I know what this is about. This is about going to feel it. I know what's coming. So I quickly pulled my arm out, and he was tased a second time. He screamed again, fell back down to the ground. And after, and then we finally got him handcuffed. And the girls, his daughters are there. They're seeing this. You know, the taser looks like a gun. He falls to the ground. They think we shot him. So another traumatic incident going on about 20 yards away. So after being cuffed, we got him up and we placed him in the patrol car. And then I went over and I removed the probes. And we took him to our regional hospital in Rapid City to be checked out because, you know, back when the tasers first came out, that was our policy that we had to take him in and make sure that everything was okay. So Ranger Eric and I left with him and we took him to Rapid City. And so the rest of the Rangers are trying to still deal with the mom and the brother and the two girls and search the vehicle that they had parked in the no parking area for the public. So while we're at the hospital, so we drive to the hospital, it's about 21 miles away. While we're there, that guy looked at us and he said, "Who are you people?" And I kind of got this smile on my face and I said, "We're park rangers." I said, "We work for the National Park Service." And he told us, "The fight never ends that soon." And Ranger Eric looked at him and he asked, "What usually happens?" Oh dear. And this guy says, "We usually beat the crap out of each other until one of us gives up."
In reference to law enforcement?
Yes. Wow. Reference to law enforcement. So then the local police department shows up. And, you know, after he was cleared medically, then he was turned over to them and they went to graciously take him for us to the jail because we had to get back and do a lot of work. So they took him to the jail and booked him into the jail for us. And so as we get back to the park and the rangers are searching the vehicle, they find this scrapbook or this photo album is what they found. And inside it, they found a newspaper article, and it was from the Seattle newspaper. And it's of this guy being escorted by two officers, and he was covered in blood. Blood just dripping down his face. Yeah. And this guy had this article and several other articles in this photo album, like they were his prized possessions or something. I don't know. So,
well, it doesn't sound like he ever won. It might have lasted longer, but it doesn't sound like this guy ever won.
Exactly. Yeah. And we didn't ask him what his record was.
Are you like 1-1, 2-0, 0-5?
What was your story? This guy was so big, though. I mean, I think somebody would have seriously gotten hurt had we not had tasers at Mount Rushmore to take this guy on. So anyway, and there's also pictures of them in the photo album cooking what looked like meth somewhere in the woods. And they had photographs of this in their photo.
That sounds like a something you would want to keep in your scrapbook. Oh, and here's me cooking
exactly,
at Christmas time.
look at those tubs and the hoses coming out of them and the beacons on
the
table.
We did a good job on that one.
So that's right. So in the van, we found several precursors to cooking meth. And I think in the state of South Dakota, three or more is a felony. And so we found those. And then large black garbage bags, and they were full of clothes and purses and other items that had tags on them, all from Walmart's. So, as we're doing some of this, so mom actually gets arrested because she has a firearm on her. She has precursors to making meth and obviously stolen merchandise, and along with child endangerment to kind of go along with all that. So mom goes to jail. Two other rangers take mom to jail, back to Rapid City. And then the kids were taken by social services, and they were placed in a temporary foster care. And so mom was on drugs, so, you know, she was in jail. Well, she kind of made a deal with prosecutors that she rolled over on her husband so she could get out of jail. But the stipulations for her getting out of jail is she had to stay clean for 6 months. So she lived in Rapid City in a halfway house and had to stay clean for 6 months before she could get her children back.
Should be longer.
Okay. So then probably longer. But, you know, once we finished our part of the case, we're kind of out of the rest of it. But then the bad guy went to jail, and he also had warrants out of California. So it was my understanding, what I was told, is once he served his time in Pennington County in Rapid City, then he was going to be extradited to California to serve his time there, that they wanted him. They were going to extradite him from South Dakota when he was finished. So all we could figure is by the time he got out of jail, his children would be adults and hopefully out on their own and away from that, definitely away from that kind of environment. Yeah. But I felt really bad for the kids, ages 5 and 7, never been to school. And it just got worse. They'd never had a Christmas. They apparently weren't fed real well, you know, according to the girls. And I show up to work the next day, and there's a bottle of Rid on my desk, for lice, because both of the girls had lice in their hair, and it was awful. I mean, it was really sad, but it was awful. But man, in talking with the superintendent about this whole incident, you know, I just said, had we not had these tasers, I said, he would have done bodily harm to one or all of us for sure, as soon as you laid hands on this guy. And I mean, that's how big this guy was.
And then he could have been met with some lethal force too. So it could have also been a very bad outcome for him.
Absolutely. I mean, we could have shot him.
Right.
If there was that going on to one of our fellow rangers, you know, and you fear for your life. Yeah, absolutely. It could have ended in a whole different scenario. But thank goodness we had the tasers and we were able to implement them and as a tool on our belt. And I can't say enough about them, because it was as a great outcome for the rangers. Actually. So that was a good day. good day for us. A little bit of paperwork, but a good day for us. Also, it was close to Christmas, and the girls commented on all the pretty lights, you know, because they'd never had a Christmas tree. Oh, they'd never had a Christmas. And so we, when we went back to the park, and the next day we were telling people in the park about it, we got a bunch of donations from all the employees, from maintenance, interp, rangers, admin. Everybody chipped in, and I think we got like over $200 that was donated. And so a couple of the employees, after work that day, went, that lived in Rapid City, they went and they purchased Christmas gifts for these two little girls. Yeah, and then they wrapped them, and then they delivered them to the foster home along with the social worker. They delivered them for the girls. So the girls had this amazing Christmas, and it was my understanding that they were put in school and that they were doing really well, and that it was just a really, really good thing for them to be in this foster home for the length of time, you know, at least 6 months, but the length of time that they were in there. So yeah, it was really cool. I mean, that was such a wonderful giving Christmas. It just made you feel good that there still is some good out there in the world.
Right.
And it was fun to be a part of that part of it.
Yeah. And it's so nice. Here's another example again of people who come into the park to commit their crimes, or their criminals coming into the park, and business was taken care of. Bad guy went to jail. And in this case, these kids who've never been taken care of themselves actually had a good outcome, at least as far as up to the point that you know about. So hopefully their future ended up on a different trajectory because of the incident at Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I hope that's exactly right. I hope that was a changing time for them and that things are looking up for them. Definitely.
All right. Yep. Well, so Nancy, you mentioned you'd been tased before. You know, in order to carry a taser in the early, when the National Park Service was first getting tasers, and the company Taser, you know, recommended you be tased as part of their training. By the time that I got my taser training, it was optional. And so you didn't have to be tased. My husband ended up being tased like 3 times because he ended up being a taser instructor. So, you know, that probably explains a lot of stuff. But anyway, so by the time when I got my training, it was optional. And so we're going through that. And the chief ranger in the park at that time, he was attending the same taser training as we were. And I'm sitting there going, dreading it the whole time. That's all I could think about. I don't want to be tased. I don't want to be tased. But I'm like, okay, all right, we're going to wait and see. If the chief is tased, we're all getting tased. And so at the end of the, you know, the training, you know, comes time for the taser, and the instructor is like, okay, who wants to be tased? And silence. Complete silence. And I'm sitting there going, I'm waiting for him. And he declined to be tased. And there was no way I was going to be, because there was no pressure for me. But really, it wasn't the pain that I was nervous about. I was afraid that in front of all my peers, I literally was going to pee my pants. I was convinced that I was going to pee my pants or something else. So that was the reason I didn't want to be tased. And I haven't been tased. So you go, girl.
We went through the training, and I remember we went to the Mammoth Jail, and they put mats on the floor, and we went into one of the cells, and we got tased, and it hurts. Something. And then I went through training to become a taser instructor when I went to Mount Rushmore, and we also had the option in that class of being tased or not, and I was the only one that had been tased before. And so I opted to not get tased again because I had been tased before. I'm like, I can sit in court and tell anybody that I know what it's like to be tased. So I opted out of that.
Well, and then interesting, after that like time frame of being tased was optional, then the National Park Service decided that absolutely not, you are not going to be tased. And so they kind of went through that evolution. Correct. Yeah. Yep. Like, so anybody taking taser training after that point didn't have to be tased. But, you know, my kind of thought process at the time was like, I carry a gun and I don't have to be shot, you know, but I get the reason.
And I wasn't that. I was never beat with my nightstick either, but
we were pepper sprayed.
Yes, the OC spray was definitely a dandy on that. So
So my Ranger Tale takes place in the Grant Village area of Yellowstone National Park in 2007, I think. In Grant, the Grant area is located on the Yellowstone Lake is shaped like a thumb and three fingers. And so the Grant area is situated on this thumb, which is like a big thumb. It's a big area. And it was the development was built in 1984 and named after Ulysses S. Grant, who was president when Yellowstone became the world's first national park in 1872. You probably figured that out. Yeah. Awesome. But it had not been around very much. So fun fact here, it was referred to as the Mistake on the Lake, because there were four cutthroat spawning streams that went right through the area. It was built right in the middle of it. And because of the cutthroat spawning streams, that was prime grizzly bear habitat. So, but anyway, this incident started.
Yes.
It started in the Grant Campground, which is one of the largest campgrounds in Yellowstone. It's over 400 sites. They're all several loops, A loop through I loop or whatever, L loop.
It is huge. Big,
yeah,
for sure.
And it's lodgepole pine trees right on the lake. So a ranger named Ben responded to a noise complaint in the campground, and dispatch was saying that they got a lot of 911 calls because there was loud and vulgar stuff coming from these people in sight, whatever it was, in B loop. And the campers were actually very scared. And there's a lot of children, you know, in the campground. And so people were making their kids get in their tents and their campers and zipping up. And this is probably late afternoon, early evening. So still daylight at this point, but they were hiding in their tents, really scared of these people, not knowing what they're going to do. They were very violent, talked about a lot of violent things.
Yeah. Wow.
So when Ranger Ben got there, he approaches the site and he contacts three men who just immediately started getting really aggressive and hostile, and they were threatening to kill him. I mean, that's not a good situation. So Ben did a great job. He throws it in reverse, backs up. He takes a position of cover and he calls for backup. And when law enforcement says the word backup, that means something a little bit different to me than somebody says, hey, can I get some assistance here?
Yes, it does.
When we say backup, that means immediate assistance. And I had just walked to my house from the weight room, which is, you know, a couple hundred yards. And I walked in the door. I had my radio because I just listened to it after, you know, sometimes we don't have a life and my radio on, and I hear Ben calling for backup, and I just threw my clothes on as fast as I could and ran out the door. And then I did not even have my boots tied. They were very loosely, I wasn't going to trip over anything, but they really weren't tied. And so
I'm sure Ben.
Yeah, I looked at the dispatch log later, and I couldn't believe how the just like 3 or 4 minutes from the time I heard the call to the time I actually got on scene was a small amount of time. So
wow, that's awesome.
So I get there, I'm parking behind his vehicle, and so the campground is like, where this is there's a loop. You know, campgrounds have loops, and these people were, they had a van that they were camping in, and it was kind of at the apex of the loop. And so
it's always a van.
It's always a van. And so, but it wasn't a white van. It wasn't a serial killer van. It was just a dirt bag van. We go in and I park right behind Ben. And of course they had been, you know, hollering things at him, threatening violence, blah, blah, blah. So then they see me and they're like, oh, I think they decided to call me every disgusting female cuss word they could think of. They called me C word, B word, wow. You know, everything. So they turned all their attention on me. And I know Ben was probably a little relieved, you know, he's like, oh, okay, they're going to get hurt
now. No kidding.
And so we're, you know, of course, backup is coming from other places. We're trying to keep the comm center informed. And so these guys then went back inside their van. And we're like, uh-oh, because now that we can't see them.
We think that they're
coming out with weapons. We're expecting any second. So we have long guns. We've got our rifles. And also remember, like, this is a campground. It's about dinner time and everybody's in their campsites in theory and in the people in the loops adjacent to, they don't know anything that's going on. And so we've got long guns out, but we're like, oh my gosh, we don't necessarily know what's behind them if we have to shoot at these guys and if they're coming out and we have a gunfight. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, they weren't coming out and we're hollering for them, you know, giving them commands and they are not complying. They're not coming out. So we're like, uh-oh, barricaded suspects. Now what? So we requested our special response team. Yellowstone has a special response team, but kind of like a SWAT-ish team. You know, they're coming from all over the park, which, you know, they're all over, like could be 2 hours away, you know, to get a team assembled. That might take a while, but we didn't know how long they were going to be barricaded essentially in their van. Eventually they come out and it's still just Ben and me there. And they start telling us how they were going to take our weapons away from us, use them on us, and what the bullets were going to do to us, which were 223s, and what that was going to do to our bodies when it entered us. And I really was expecting to be in a gunfight any second. We're ready for that any second. You know, it was pretty nerve-wracking.
That's scary. Yeah. That's really,
When they're telling us all that stuff, they were sitting there like, you know, nonchalantly on the picnic table, like, yeah, I know you got this and this is what we're going to do. And we take that away from you. Like they didn't seem to have a care in the world. At some point, you know, during that point, we tried some dialogue and I don't remember exactly how that went, but we managed to get their names, where they were from, kind of like, we knew that it was dad and two adult sons. Dad had been in Vietnam. He was a Vietnam veteran. And then the two adult sons were both on leave from Iraq and Iran. I don't know how to say it correctly. You say it one way if you're from the South and you say it correctly if you're in other areas, but anyway, so they were both each on leave and they were trying to do this camping trip together and they had copious amounts of alcohol on board, which was causing them to, you know, behave this way, I guess. No excuses, but they were definitely had alcohol on board. But then they decided, then what they did was they stood up, they took off their shirts and they linked arms and started advancing toward us. And then they kind of were having this fighting stance. And so, you know, they kind of linked arms like an amoeba or something. And they, you know, as they were taking their shirts off, like, you know, they had that fighting stance. And we kind of refer to that as they got all bowed up. And so we knew that that meant they were wanting a fight, absolutely wanted a fight. But
sure they were.
We could see that they weren't armed because they had no shirts on and they had shorts. So we had to transition from our long guns. We had to sling our long guns, which we train, you know, when you're doing your law enforcement and firearms training, you train transitioning, you know, so we transitioned and drew our tasers. And then that is what made them stop. So just like your guy, you know, like they could have cared less that we had our firearms pointed at them. They could have cared less, but seeing our tasers, they knew what that was and that made them stop, but they stayed just out of reach of a taser. You know, like you've only got 21 feet and that's not even going to be necessarily, you know, accurate, you know, to try to tase somebody from 21 feet is kind of hard and you got wind and other issues that might not make that successful.
Sure.
But so they stayed just, just a little bit, you know, just out of reach. And so Ben and I were, you know, kind of as best we could be behind cover of our vehicles. And there were three of them and two of us. And we were totally, and we both said to each other, we're standing there talking kind of, you know, and we're like, okay, if they get past this point, we're tasing. But they never did. But anyway, we're going, all right, if we tase two of them, one of them's not getting tased. And so it was going to be a quick transition. And I knew we would probably have to draw a pistol and somebody was going to get shot. So, So we had people coming, and I was the only supervisor of the people who were coming. And then, of course, just the only one there. And meanwhile, my supervisor, who was Matt Van Zura, who was on one of the Ranger Tales earlier. He's the one with the llama and the fugitive. So just to get a grasp of who I'm talking about, go back and listen to that one. So Matt, my supervisor, asked me on the radio, he goes, okay, what's your plan? And I'm like, oh, shoot.
I gotta have a plan.
So the plan is to, when the other troops get here, to get on the other side, we're going to distract and separate them and tase them. And so, yeah, kind of fun story a little bit after that, you know, we shortened that to DST, distract, separate, tase. And then, so I had told my kids this story sort of, and you know, they're, you know, I don't know, 10, 12, I don't know how old they were at the time. And so then, you know, they'd be fighting or something or getting on my nerves. And I'm like, am I going to have to do a DST? And so I didn't tase my children. Nobody call Child Protective Services on me. Plus they're adults now anyway. But anyway, so the troops start arriving and we're communicating with them to come in, you know, okay, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, you come in the wrong way of the campground loop and you're going to be facing this way. Yep. And I'm like, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, you're coming in my way with me. Ben goes over to the other side to kind of get them set up because he and I had been talking about the plan that we just developed because my supervisor said, what's your plan?
On fly. That's right.
So anyway, after confirming everybody knew the plan and we were all set in place, you know, I gave the, hey, let's go on the radio. And so there are three of us on my side. And I think there were three or four on the other side. And so I knew one of them's name was Ryan. And I'm like, hey, Ryan, look over here, Ryan. And so I couldn't think of anything clever to say, hey, your pants on fire or, you know, anyway. I'm like, hey, Ryan. And then the guys on the other side called out the other names. So they unlinked arms. They were distracted. They separated. And they came, like Ryan came towards us like, oh, you're calling my name. And the other ones came towards the other side. And so they all got tased simultaneously. And it was, wow. And now it's dusk. And I can't believe nobody videotaped this thing with the electricity at dusk. And they literally got stiff as a board and fell down. Pew, 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 all simultaneous.
That's yeah. Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
So on my side, they got tased from two of us. So Ryan, you know, it was just this guy, Ryan, coming towards us and two of us tased him at the same time. And he went down. Mm-hmm. And then there was one. And then actually on the other side, there were three Rangers and two of them. One of the tasers malfunctioned and the other Ranger got in there and it worked. It worked very slick. So everybody got tased. They're all on the ground. They all went down, stiff as a board. So one Ranger on my side had not used his taser. And I looked at that Ranger who was not tethered, you know, like, are you going to cuff him? Because, you know, you got to jump in there, cuff him very quickly, kind of under power. Right. And I'm looking at him like, you're going to cuff him? And he just stood there. And so I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you going to make the girl do this? And so I handed my taser to the other guy who was also tethered to him. I just kind of quickly, this isn't slow motion, by the way. This is all very quickly. But I'm like, oh. And so
sure. Yeah.
I handed my taser and I said to myself, WWND. And if you don't know what that means, please listen to the previous podcast. It means what would Nancy do? And I'm like, WWND, what would Nancy do? So I just jumped on him and cuffed him. Because, you know, the other...
Good girl. No, way to go.
Anyway, so, of course, then we had to do the EMS piece. We had to remove the probes carefully after they're cuffed, you know, check for injuries because these guys just fell flat on their backs on asphalt. And they all got transported to Jackson, Wyoming, to the jail there. And they were charged with 18 USC violations, assaulting officer, resisting, intimidation, and interference. So
nice.
And then I don't know what happened after that. Awesome. There was no trial. I don't know what it meant for their service, you know, and, you know, it was sad and unfortunate. And I don't know what the criminal history was except for the dad. Dad had a long criminal history, the Vietnam vet. He, his criminal history was, assault on officers and domestic violence, convictions. So he was not a good guy.
Apples and trees. You never know what's going to happen.
So,
but good job on your guys' part.
Yeah. Awesome. So, and that was the first tasing incident in Yellowstone. So, and
mine was the first tasing incident.
All right. High five, sister. all right. Well, hopefully people enjoyed that little, our little tales.
Yeah, they were pretty fun. We've got more, but those are two that stick out.
That's right.
Both of us.
Yeah, we discovered at our when we were telling our war story. So, which is always fun. And
yeah, it is.
All right. Well, hey, that's all we have for today for Ranger Tales. So, stay safe in wild places and watch out for the company you keep.
And make sure you always comply with law enforcement.
Or you might get 50,000 volts of electricity. All right.
Bye, Kira. Thanks. It's been awesome.
Hey, guess what? We've got merch. So go to our website at crimeoffthegrid.com, scroll down to the merch button, hit that thing, and find something fun for yourself or the true crime enthusiast in your life.